Hello, and welcome to Open Source Sex. I'm Violet Blue, and I live at tinynibbles.com. Visit my site for more information about me, my books, my blog, and to peruse hundreds of hours worth of sex ed articles and erotica by a variety of best-selling authors. I'd like to give a warm welcome to new listeners who might have found me through the Wall Street Journal or Newsweek, or just by seeing the word sex in the iTunes top 10 list, a dubious honor if I must say so myself. I did get a humorous email from the Wall Street Journal, something about a fatwa or something after open source sex moved past the journal's podcast in the list. But then again, I did drink a bit of wine last night and chirp a few off-color remarks about making Ted couple my female dog with a USB leash, and something even naughtier about Al Franken and some kind of penetrative sex act involving a shuffle. I'm kidding. A little. Actually, I'm not kidding. The thing I'm especially excited about in all this is the quote I managed to get in Newsweek about not needing big boobs or big advertisers to podcast about sex and how podcasting is the ultimate democratic sex ed medium. I really believe that. Sex podcasting totally isn't what people think it is. They see the word sex or porn, and especially in conjunction with iTunes, and they have a reaction. Sex podcasting, at least at this time, has to have substance to interest people. And when was the last time you saw a porn video with any substance in it, I ask you? Well, I've seen a couple, but that's not the point. I had a long interview with the Newsweek journalist, and not only was he a really cool guy, which it really surprised me, I didn't think that people working for these giant publications would be cool, but he was really cool, and we talked at length about how limits on speech in this country prevent intelligent discourse about sex and sexuality, let alone fun discourse about sex and sexuality. When I talked with Wahini Vara at the Wall Street Journal about this, we discussed at length how hard it is for me to talk explicitly about safe sex when callers on radio shows have questions. In cases like this, it's often a matter of safety, being able to give them advice on how to protect themselves. And the sex we see in our culture is always a reaction to something. No one's ever having any fun with it, or it's really contrived and offensive. And as I told both of the journalists, when we learn about sex in school, those few of us who actually got sex education in school, we learned about reproduction, not pleasure, which to me seems to be the central core of sex and sexuality. And few people see non-illustrated adult genitals in normal, healthy states of arousal until we see porn, which many would argue isn't very normal as far as sex goes. So open source sex is all about democratizing our sexual experience. Each of our sexualities is as unique to each of us as a fingerprint. We write our own system code as we go along. We use naughty hacks, widgets that we download from a variety of sources. We read books on using our software better. We watch videos to get our hardware harder. Sometimes we do a big system overhaul or an upgrade, but mostly we go along customizing our sexual selves until it works. Then we keep customizing because it's fun. Anyway, I'm just a girl from a tough J.T. Leroy-style background with a lot of sex ed training, a couple small indie publishers floating around making offers, no job except 10 bucks a post on fleshbot.com, and a serious lust for life and sex. The funny thing about the Newsweek story, at the 11th hour, the journalist emailed me to ask if Newsweek could send a photographer over in the morning to my house before they went to print so they could get a photo for the piece of me in my podcasting studio. Well, okay, first, my editor at Fleshbot had beaten them to the punch by asking me in the 10th hour to run Fleshbot in the morning, so I declined, but I also declined because, Well, let me describe the democracy of podcasting over here at the Open Source Sex Empire. Oh wait, because it's porn casting, I'm supposed to say, I'm in my sexy studio full of suggestive dials and knobs, and I'm not wearing anything except 7-inch high black heels, a few tattoos, and red lipstick. Oh, and I have a really big microphone. Except the only part that's true is the big dorky microphone, $19.99 at Radio Shack, thank you very much. The sexiest bit, I think of all, is my iBook, but that's pretty much where it stops. There isn't any studio, it's just me and my laptop in whatever room in the house that seems the quietest, an iMic, and a seriously embarrassingly cheap microphone. After that, it's black sandals, gray drawstring pants, white tank top, and you guessed it, my glasses. I wear lipstick if I'm mobile, but of course you can feel free to imagine anything you want. Okay, with all that said, if you're still with me, now I'm going to read that Antiques Roadshow Smut I Promised in the last show, written by Dante Davidson. He's an occasional writing partner of another open source sex author, Allison Tyler, and I'm a really big fan of his work. I've, in fact, published him in all three of my erotic fiction anthologies, Taboo and Sweet Life 1 and 2, which are all erotic fantasy collections for couples. The story is written from a male point of view because Dante is a male author, but you'll forget all about a girl delivering male dialogue when the appraisals begin. So now, Appraising Love, an Antiques Roadshow Romance by Dante Davidson. I have to admit it, and I hope this doesn't make me sound like a cad, but those legs were what caught my attention first. In all my years of searching, I'd never seen perfection like that. Delicately curved, almost achingly arched, and I could imagine running my fingers up and around their smooth, supple surfaces for hours, getting down on my hands and knees to worship them. I've always been something of a leg man. With effort, I maneuvered myself through the crowd, and when I was close enough, I reached out my hand, wanting just one touch. "Hey!" a female voice said, sounding surprised. "What are you doing?" I lowered my voice as I named the maker. "Isn't it?" The owner raised her painted-on eyebrows, giving me a quizzical stare which I processed before returning my gaze to my newfound love. "How could you know that without checking the label?" she asked. I didn't look at her while I answered. My eyes were still captivated by her table, those flawless legs, that haughty aristocratic stance. The color was a rich, unmarred caramel that had obviously been untouched since it left the creator's hands. Often, at such appraisal roadshows, we see once beautiful objects now destroyed by an owner's idiotic, if well-intentioned, attempt at refinishing. Never mess with perfection. Just to be entirely sure that the treasure was indeed what I thought it was, I got on my knees and crawled under the table. My heart pounded even faster as I read that golden label beneath the rim. There, in unblemished perfection, were the artisan's engraved initials. I smiled when I saw them. "Are you okay?" the owner asked. I'd forgotten all about her until she bent down to peer at me under the table. Thinking back, I must have looked fairly ridiculous, dressed impeccably in my gray suit and navy blue tie, lying on the ground grinning up at the wood. The workmanship was remarkable, and I couldn't help but stroke the firm underside with the palms of my hands. If furniture could make a noise, this table would have purred. "I'm fine," I said weakly, breaking free of my daze and looking at the owner's face. For the first time, I really noticed her. I took in her bright blue eyes and even brighter blue eyeshadow. "I'm Jonathan Silver, appraiser for Winston Logan." Her attitude changed instantly from hands off to help yourself. "You work here," she said, indicating the breadth of the show with a sweeping glance. As I climbed out from under the table, I continued my brief observation of her face. She had two perfectly round circles of rouge on her cheeks, making her appear as if she'd been playing dress-up with her mother's cosmetics. Her lips sported an orange coral shade not often found in nature. Once an appraiser, always an appraiser. It can be difficult to turn off the critical voice in my head. "My name's Lucy," she said, offering me a hand, the nails of which were long and polished a vibrant, glistening green, like the underbelly scales of a tropical snake. When I let go of her hand, she ran it through her platinum-teased hair, raising the height another inch or so with a gesture. What was a woman like her doing with a table like this, I could not imagine. But it's my job to judge furniture, not people, and I plastered a false smile on my face and turned on my professional charm. "Will you go in the air with it?" I asked. Lucy gave an excited, high-pitched squeal, like a contestant on a game show. The noise was loud enough for our producer to hear, and when Corinne met my eyes from across the room, I nodded to indicate I had a winner. Oh, did I have a winner. Corinne rushed over, and I whispered into her ear what I'd found. "Are you sure, Jonathan?" Corinne asked incredulously, eyeing Lucy's attire, which did not exactly fit the normal type of clothes we see at the roadshow. Most people arrive in jeans and t-shirts, shorts if it's a hot day. The table's owner was wearing a revealing pink floral sundress that laced up the front. Part of my brain quickly categorized it as cheap and possibly slutty. But another part of my brain, the one attached to a lower segment of my anatomy, understood how someone might find a dress like that appealing. The laces had come slightly undone in the front, and for some reason I envisioned myself taking a step closer and tying the bow for Lucy, my fingers brushing the skin of her supple breasts, touching her just as gently as only moments before I had stroked the leg of her table. At that thought, I found myself looking down at Lucy's own legs. Clad in white fishnet stockings and high-heeled sandals, they were a work of art unto themselves. What would they feel like beneath the palm of my hand, I wondered. And what kind of noise would Lucy make if my fingertips grazed her skin? The same shocked "hey" that she'd said when I touched her table? From the looks she was giving me, I didn't think so. My producer nudged me, and I shook my head, embarrassed, not having heard a word Corinne had said. But Lucy, standing a few feet away, shot me another interested smile as if she understood exactly what my appraising glances meant. It all happened quickly after that. Our producer whisked Lucy away to sign some papers, and I consulted several other appraisers to get their opinion of the piece's value. My mind instantly refocused on my work. A table in less quality condition had recently sold for $250,000 at auction. I could barely contain myself imagining what this item might bring. When we found ourselves seated in front of the camera, I turned my eyes from the table to Lucy, preparing to launch into the background history of the furniture maker. I'm quite adept at my job, my mind filled with little-known facts, but when I looked at Lucy again, I forgot everything that I'd planned on saying. The makeup crew, in their haste, had removed her garish eyeshadow and electrifying lipstick, but had not bothered to replace it either. I was staring at a restored canvas, the beauty of her face shining clear now that it was free from the previous hideous coat of shellacking. "You're beautiful," I stammered, and then I stopped. I'd been about to say, "You're beautiful, table," but suddenly that wasn't what I meant at all. Change the "your" to "you're" is what I wanted to tell Lucy. "You're beautiful," I said again, referring to her this time. "My table?" she said, prompting me when she realized I was tongue-tied. She gave me that same quizzical glance she had earlier, her eyes a softer blue now that they didn't have to compete with the 70s-style shadow. Her cheeks had a natural flush to them, and I wondered what hue they would turn in the throes of passion. If I picked her up and set her down on the table, slid that flimsy dress up her thighs, and bent to kiss in a line down her throat to those loose laces, would her cheeks turn a dark scarlet blush? Or was she the type whose skin would take on a petal pink glow? I longed to find out, but I could suddenly feel my producer's eyes on me. "My table?" Lucy repeated, waiting. "Yes," I said, nodding. "Your table is a masterpiece." I put my hand on top of the surface for reassurance, and the wash of joy swept over me again. I found my words, launching into a history of this fantastic piece of furniture. I told of the maker's background, then described how each table was made by hand, and the length of time it took to create just one leg. "One of the most interesting aspects of this table," I said near the end of my spiel, "is that it is remarkably sturdy." "Really?" Lucy asked, and that one word sent my mind spinning off into fantasy land all over again. "It looks so delicate." "Sometimes delicate items can fool you," I said, trying desperately to reboard my train of thought. She looked delicate, but I had the feeling that she would last through hours of raucous lovemaking. Suddenly, I felt something brush softly against my own leg. It took only a second for me to process that Lucy had slipped out of one of those high-heeled sandals and was running her stocking toes up my calf. I managed to complete my talk, to give her an estimate of the table's worth, but somehow those numbers didn't interest me anymore. The director yelled, "Cut!" and the crew quickly moved across the room to film a segment on wind-up toys. Lucy and I were alone, between the makeshift curtain barriers, still sitting at the table looking at each other. "You mentioned that it was surprisingly sturdy," Lucy said in a low voice. I watched as she ran her tongue along her top lip, as if tasting something sweet. The gesture tugged at me, and I wanted to lean forward and do the same thing to her, to run my own tongue along both of her lips, before taking her in my arms and kissing her. I took a deep breath, trying to analyze what she'd just said. "Yes," I nodded. "While some pieces are more for show than actual use, your table could easily support 500 pounds. "Wow," Lucy said, her mouth, pure and naked of lipstick, curving into a smile. "That's a lot of weight, 3 or 4 adults, when all it has to support is 2. This was all the encouragement I needed. Quickly, I motioned to a crew member and asked him to help me put the table into one of our back storage rooms. "I need a little more time to appraise it," I said, using my most businesslike tone. The man didn't concern himself with the explanation. Without hesitating, he and I hoisted the table and brought it to one of the private rooms. Lucy followed, staring at me with what I can only describe as lustfully energetic looks. Finally, alone with Lucy, I shut the door and lifted her into my arms. I nuzzled into her neck as I carried her over to the table. She smelled delicious, spicy and exotic, and I sat her down on the edge of the table and began to kiss her skin. Lucy sighed, then leaned back fully into the table, spreading her thighs and raising her arms over her head. I didn't know where to start first. I wanted to keep kissing her, but I also wanted to peel off her dress and simply look at her body. As when I'm appraising a piece of furniture, I needed to know what I was working with. Lucy took over for me, slipping the dress over her head and then sprawling out in her white satin bra and panties, white fishnets, garter belt, and sandals still on. The room we were in contained several other pieces of furniture, including a full-length gilt-edged mirror. I hurried to position it against the wall next to the table, and then grabbed Lucy around the waist and slid her toward me. I kissed her in a line down her body, starting with her lips and then moving to the hollow of her neck, her delicate collarbones, down to her breasts, where I lingered until she arched her back and moaned. Slowly, I kissed my way toward her satin-clad pussy, and when I reached it, I could smell the scent of her arousal. I licked her through her panties first, just teasing her with my tongue pressed hard against that shiny material. Then I helped her out of the undergarment and began to French kiss her pussy, using my fingers to hold open her lips while my tongue made soft and slow circles around her clit. After a moment, I looked into the mirror and could see Lucy's face, her head turned to the side, mouth open and eyes shut. Her hair had come free from the ponytail, and it fell loose to her shoulders. Now, brushed flat instead of teased, it perfectly framed her beautiful face. A face that I suddenly recognized. "Oh, God," I said. "Yes," Lucy said. "Oh, God, it's great." "No," I said, looking down at her. "I know you." She opened her eyes and locked into my gaze. "Yes," she said. "I'm Lucy. We met out there." Her cheeks were flushed with pleasure, a soft pink as I'd imagined they would be, but her face was composed. She looked a lot more at ease than I felt, my cock throbbing beneath my slacks, desperate for contact with the warm, wet mouth of her sex. Still, I had to get something clear. "You're not some..." I wanted to say hick, but I changed my mind quickly. "Some innocent who just brought a table to be appraised," I said, watching as she pushed herself into a semi-upright position on the table, leaning up on one elbow. With her free hand, she began to stroke her naked pussy, slowly and sensuously teasing herself while I watched. She seemed to be waiting to see when I'd get it, and finally, when she tilted her head back as the sensations washed over her, I knew who she was. I'd seen the look on her face before, at a recent auction in New York. When she'd won the piece she was after, she leaned her head back and sighed, the same look of ultimate pleasure on her face. "You're Lucinda Daniels," I said, undoing my slacks now, unable to wait any longer. "You work for Rowan McLean." She nodded, her hands now helping to guide me between her parted thighs. The contact of my cock with the dreamy wetness of her sex made me momentarily lose track of my thoughts. I plunged inside of her, and she let out that same pleasurable sigh again, her hand going up to her throat, fingers beating there as if trying to still her pounding pulse. I stopped trying to figure it all out at that point, diving in deeper inside of her. The table supported our weight, but I needed to feel her in my grip. Grabbing her around the waist, I lifted her into my arms and then pulled her down onto me. Then, inspired, I took her over to the wall and pressed her against that antique mirror. I couldn't get deep enough inside of her, slamming into her willing cunt and then backing out to the tip, then slamming in again to make her sigh like that. She dragged her fingernails down my back, and I had the vision of what they looked like, that obscene emerald green raking against my skin, leaving marks that I'd have to remember this by. Suddenly, those nails didn't seem so offensive. There was something sexy in the whole slutty attire, fishnets still in place, sandal-clad feet hooked around my thighs. "God, Jonathan, I'm going to come," Lucy said softly. And I took her to that fantasy place with me, fucking her harder and faster until she leaned down and bit my shoulder as the climax flew through her. I came a second after, pumping my cock inside her as those wave-like contractions washed over it. There were several moments when I simply held her in my arms, leaning against the mirror, my eyes closed, breathing deeply. Then I carried her back to the wonderful table and set her down. She looked at me with a coy expression I hadn't seen before. "It worked, you know," she said softly. "I don't understand," I told her, watching sadly as she pulled her dress back over her head, that magnificent body disappearing from view. "You love the Creator's work, and I'm sort of partial to yours," she explained. "But I've never been able to catch your attention at the auctions. You always have your eyes on some piece of furniture or another, never seem aware of the piece of ass that wants you.
So you came here? I prompted.
Somehow, I thought you might find my getup exciting. When she said it, I realized she was right. I'd seen her often at the auctions, always dressed in some subdued black suit, elegant pearls around her neck, that white blonde hair pulled back severely, tiny glasses perched on the end of her perfect nose. I never would have guessed she would doll herself up like this, and I couldn't have suspected that I would have liked it.
You knew what the table was worth, though, I said, telling her that one thing that nagged at my pride. You wanted to fool me.
She made it all better with her answer.
I wanted to fuck you, she said, leaning forward to whisper it, her mouth against my ear, hot breath against my skin.
You were always so busy appraising everything, you never had eyes for me.
That made me stop thinking about my job and start thinking about what it would be like to make love to Lucy again, maybe on the four-poster bed I had seen in one of the other storage rooms.
But you have eyes for me now, she continued, spreading her arms wide and taking the stance of a centerfold model.
So, her voice was rich with humor, what do you think I'd fetch?
A pause, and another one of those fantastic, cock-teasing lip licks.
I mean, if you were to put me up on auction.
I took a step back, looking her over and taking a second glance before giving her my estimate.
You know how it is with a rare treasure, I finally said, pulling her toward me once again. You can never put a label on something priceless.
Wow, that story sure makes Antiques Roadshow look a lot more fun, wouldn't you say?
Thanks for listening to the show, and tune in next time when I replace The Lost Podcast, number 5. A lot of people have been emailing me about it, and since it's a lecture I give to sexuality students on sexual fetishes, I can easily do it again. Plus, fetishes are just so fascinating, and it's definitely an interesting exploration of fetish and a really good how-to for people who are wondering not only what fetishists do and how they do it, but how one might actually have sex with a fetishist. So thanks. I'm Violet Blue, and again, thank you for listening to Open Source Sex.